So we, it's rude to keep an important state official waiting, and we did that this morning, but I bet he doesn't mind, because I suspect that our Labor Commissioner, Brad Avakian, enjoyed that presentation as much as we did. But we're very pleased to have you here this morning, sir, and to talk about the, and also speaking of exquisite timing and coincidences, of course, the President talked at some length yesterday about the subject that you're going to address with us this morning, which is wages. So he queued you up nicely, and we're very happy to have you here this morning, Brad.
Should I read the title first, Mayor?
Yes, please read the item.
Item 96, accept report from Oregon Labor Commissioner Brad Avakian on the recent increase in Oregon's minimum wage.
Good morning and welcome.
Thank you, Mayor. Mayor Hales, Commissioners, my name is Brad Avakian, and I serve as Oregon's Commissioner of Labor and Industries. And I want to thank you for inviting me here today to discuss Oregon's minimum wage and how it has benefited Oregon's workers, employers, and economy. And I must say, Mayor, it's very gracious of you to apologize for having me wait, but you were entirely right. I was so pleased that I was here early enough to listen to the Future Connect students. Now, the minimum wage is just the floor wage that we want to secure for our lowest wage earners. It helps protect them. It increases consumer purchasing power. But we always want to aspire to more for our families here. Providing these kind of students with the skills and the knowledge that they need to go out and compete for a living wage job that ensures that they don't end up struggling or in poverty, and frankly, that also then proves to employers around the globe that Oregon has got the most skilled and most ready workforce that you can find anywhere, is of great benefit not just to those kids and their future families, but to our local economy as well. So I want to commend the students, PCC, and the council for the terrific work done with Future Connect. As you know, the Bureau of Labor and Industries trains much of Oregon's workforce. We support our local businesses with technical assistance, and we enforce civil rights and wage and hour laws, and do that not only to protect workers and tenants, but also to make sure that responsible employers have got a level playing field on which to compete. We also oversee Oregon's indexed minimum wage law, passed in 2002 by a very diverse coalition of labor, senior, religious, and hunger security advocates. In 2002, our voter-passed initiative tied annual increases in the minimum wage to score corresponding increases in the consumer price index. And in this way, our lowest wage earners in Oregon will always keep pace with the rising cost of goods and services. Likewise, the system also provides employers with greater certainty and predictability in the modest increases so that they can more easily plan their expenses for the upcoming year. Now, here's how it works. The Bureau adjusts the minimum wage for inflation every September, rounding it to the nearest 5 cents. The adjustment accounts for inflation as measured by the Consumer Price Index, a statistic published by the United States Bureau of Labor and Statistics, and it's based on the average change in prices over a time of a fixed market basket of goods and services. Now, our experience since 2002 is that we have seen no major spikes in wages year to year. I don't know if you have it or not, but I'll just show you this bar graph here that shows the steady and predictable increase in wages since we passed our 2002 measure. In fact, the 15-cent increase that we saw just this last year when we moved from $8.95 an hour to $9.10 an hour as of January 1st is a very typical type of an increase. And when the consumer price index declines, our minimum wage stays even as an important protection for workers in tough economic times. At the heart of what Oregonians did in 2002 are principles of basic fairness for our lowest wage earners, but also smart economics for our local businesses and our economy. There's no question that stronger businesses and a healthier economy are achieved when people have greater purchasing power. And as inflation causes the price of goods and services to rise, businesses need consumers who can keep pace. This is especially important when you're talking about minimum wage workers and their families, because these workers are not socking away their paychecks in mutual funds and 401ks. Virtually every dime that goes into the pocket of a minimum wage worker is a dime that gets reinvested in local businesses as they buy gasoline, foods, school supplies for their kids. And the modest 15-cent increase that you saw this last year went to about 100,000 workers in Oregon. And that equates to about $20 million in additional consumer purchasing power that will be reinvested in local businesses. Now, we keep a very close eye on this at the Bureau. We receive about 20,000 calls a year from Oregon businesses looking for help navigating their way through very complex local, state, and federal regulations. I frequently travel the state, meeting many business owners face-to-face and hearing their stories. I have to tell you, they're not concerned about the minimum wage. What they're concerned about across the boards is where they are going to find their good, locally trained workers that have the exact skill sets that they need to produce the goods and services that they sell. In fact, I've talked with local business owners recently who are more concerned that as time goes by and as lower wage earners increase in numbers and middle class wage earners decrease in numbers, that there won't be enough people earning enough money to buy the goods that support their local businesses. It's also interesting to take a look at who today's minimum wage worker really is. The old stereotype that it's a teenager working a few hours after school in order to get a little bit of pocket change just is not the case. 88% of minimum wage workers are over the age of 20. The average age is 35 years old. 56% of them are women, and 28% of them have children. Today's minimum wage worker is in her 30s. She's working full-time, and she may have a family to support. And this is even more critical as we consider the demographics of the Portland workforce. Portland has 15% of Oregon's population, but it's got 24% of the state's jobs and 28% of its payroll. And while wages are just slightly higher in Portland than the state average, its percentage of workers who are women and people of color is higher than the state as a whole. It also notably has 26% of the state's hospitality industry, where many of the minimum wage jobs are found. So these demographics make the minimum wage an especially important factor in the standard of living for many Portland families. In comparison to the rest of the country, Oregon has got a strong minimum wage, and I have to tell you, after 12 years of Oregon's experience in indexing it to the Consumer Price Index, it's proven to be a great benefit not only to Oregon's workforce, but to our businesses as well. Mayor and commissioners, I again thank you very much for inviting me to come down and share a few thoughts today, and would be pleased to take a few questions if you have them.
Mayor, I have a few, if I could.
Please.
First of all, can we amend the ordinance to provide that this be an annual affair?
That'd be a nice idea, actually, if our commissioner is willing.
I think it's actually a great public service to do this annually, to have this conversation. And we won't always get the commissioner, but I hope we can do this, because I think there's an enormous amount of public, valuable information for the public.
Thank you.
Mr. Commissioner, I have four quick questions. One is, the critics of the minimum wage sometimes argue that it has the effect of costing jobs, not adding jobs. And that's been, we've heard those arguments at the federal level, the local level. What's your view based on the data about whether a modest increase in the minimum wage ends up actually costing jobs?
It just has not been Oregon's experience. In fact, since 2002, when we began indexing to the Consumer Price Index, we've seen the total number of businesses in Oregon increase, and even more notably, the total number of small businesses, that's with employees of less than 10, have also increased during that time period. really the more important factor is consumer purchasing power. Businesses depend on people's ability to come in and buy their goods and services, and you just cannot ignore $20 million of additional consumer purchasing power going back into local economies.
The second thing you referred to in passing was the difference between a minimum wage and a living wage. And I'm curious, what do we now consider the range of a living wage in Oregon, say, for a family of four?
Well, and that starts with an understanding of what the minimum wage really is. The minimum wage is a floor. It's not a ceiling. It provides the basic sustenance of life. And in every state in the country, and including at the federal level, that is a poverty wage. And I think it's very important that we aspire to more for our families and our communities than that. There are a lot of definitions of what a living wage is. I consider a living wage to be that enables a family to pay their basic expenses of life, but then to also pay for health care, for education, and to save a little bit for retirement.
And finally, we're reading stories nationally about big companies that are paying their workforce at or near the minimum wage, and their workforce is then eligible for a range of public assistance benefits. And in some instances, we're hearing that's part of the business model. What's your view of that approach to as an employment practice?
You know, we're very lucky in Oregon to have tremendous employers that really will go the extra mile for their employees, pay a fair wage, not try to jimmy around wages and benefits because of some other external factor. But we have to recognize that there is a relationship here between the policies that state, local, and federal governments implement, the standards that they require in order to to provide assistance when it's needed, and that does have some interplay with the wages that people are earning in communities. And it's why one reason I was very pleased to see you a minute ago say we ought to do this every year. I think our open communication is very important to making sure the standards are set at the right level, and at the same time, constant communication with our business community on those same issues is equally important.
Thank you.
Other questions, Commissioner Bakken?
This isn't really a question, but I have to say that today I feel a certain sense of ownership of this event and a feeling of irrational pride for two reasons. One, I happened to work for the Senate Democrats in 1998 when Brad Avakian first ran for the legislature. And he didn't happen to win that year, but ran a gallant effort. And I was very pleased when he went on to be in the legislature and to have his current position. So I'm very proud, Brad, of our 16-year-long, or maybe it's 17-year-long association. Also, I'm very proud of the fact that I happened to write our current minimum wage law, because it was passed by initiative at a time when I was in the initiative writing business, and it wasn't a very hard job. I think it's two sentences long, but I wouldn't mind having that on my tombstone.
Steve, before PolitiFact swoops in, I just want to be clear. You wrote it, or you helped to write it?
I believe I wrote it.
Well, I must say, Commissioner Novick, I really appreciate you mentioning that great achievement of your own in the same breath as my first political loss. Thank you very much for that.
That was a two-way.
Brad was taking on Tom Hartung, who was a giant in Washington County politics. It was a definite moral victory. I also just can't let this event end without sharing my personal favorite quote about the minimum wage, which is from Franklin Roosevelt on June 24th, 1938. And I think it feeds into something Commissioner Fisk said earlier, which is, do not let any calamity howling executive with an income of $1,000 a day who has been turning his employees over to the government relief rolls in order to preserve his company's undistributed reserves tell you, using his stockholders' money to pay the postage for personal opinions, that a wage of $11 a week is going to have a disastrous effect on all American industry. Fortunately for business as a whole, and therefore for the nation, that type of executive is a rarity, with whom most business executives most heartily disagree.
Wow.
That's the way presidents used to talk.
Well, that's the second rant we've heard from. Can I come back to one other thing you mentioned, Mr. Commissioner? The prior presentation about connecting young people to jobs. we have a big bike industry now here in Portland, and they make bikes. It turns out there's a lot of welding jobs associated with that. If we could do one thing better from your point of view to match high school and community college graduates and college graduates with those kinds of blue-collar jobs, which over time are pretty good with benefits, what would you suggest we either work more on or do better?
Well, let me tell you something that is already happening in its infancy, but which in time is going to be tremendous for this city and for the state. You know, one of the things that we have seen in our workforce almost across every industry sector is the rising age of it. You know, folks in the building trades are in their late 40s to early 50s. The average age of a Pacific Corps line worker in recent years has been 53 years old. The average age of a community college student has gone into the late 20s. And if you go back about 15 years, the average age of an apprentice in Oregon was 19, the perfect age to get skilled up and ready for a living wage job. Today it's 28.2. So we took it upon ourselves at the Bureau a couple years ago to study why that is happening in Oregon. It's happening everywhere in the country. It's worse here. Those ages began to spike like that at the exact time period that we began systematically eliminating shop class from our middle schools and our high schools. And so a very diverse group went down with me to Salem a couple years ago in order to advocate for the return of those programs. A grant fund was created, the Career and Technical Education Revitalization Grant Fund, and it was funded. Last year, 21 middle schools and high schools around the state received fully restored career education programs. This year, because of that great success, 140 schools across the state received grants and restored programs. 52 of those are the middle schools and high schools of the Portland Public School District, which are instituting a terrific program to teach young people the skills that are needed to write a resume, to do a job interview, what a strong work ethic means in order to compete with anybody on the globe for a job. And all of these programs, we're going to build pathways up into community college, higher education, apprenticeship, or directly into jobs. And if I may take just one more minute, Mayor Hills, you might be very interested in the kind of programs we're seeing. You'll see the return of traditional crafts, wood shop, metal shop, welding, things that are necessary in our state right now. But take the program out in Joseph, Oregon, way up in the northeast corner of the state, which I thought for sure would be a future Farmers of America program. But in order to address the high unemployment rate of northeast Oregon, they wanted to attract manufacturing to that part of the state. So a couple of very sharp students got together with some local business folks and teachers, and they built a new curriculum that teaches students how to write and use computer-aided design software, the very cutting technology worldwide that controls robotic machines and stamps out component parts for anything you want to build. If you are a manufacturer anywhere on the globe, you will not find a better locally trained workforce than Joseph, Oregon. The Beaverton School District next year will be starting up a program in biomedical engineering. So the reason I say I'm very optimistic about the path that we are on right now is we're going to be training a local workforce in the skill sets that are needed by Oregon industries and emerging industries nationwide. And after about 8 more years of investment, when every middle school and high school has got these programs connected in an upward mobile way, I believe you're going to see Oregon having one of the best workforce development systems in the nation.
That's great. Great point. Thank you. Well, thanks so much for being here today. Oh, go ahead. Didn't mean to plow over you there. Sorry. Go ahead.
All right. First, I want to affirm your statement that people making minimum wage put all of that money back into the community. I know for the 7 years that I lived below the poverty line, that was the case for me. In fact, sometimes putting a little more than was in my bank account into the community and then having to pay the bouncing fees. My daughter currently works at a downtown retailer and makes about 40 cents more than the minimum wage, and she does the things that 23-year-olds do, and it's all gone by the end of the month. Thank goodness, thanks to our president, she's covered under my husband and my health care, because she wouldn't be able to afford even the coverage that's being offered under the Affordable Health Care Act. It would be very difficult for her. She'd have to make some difficult choices. So it's even what we've done in terms of the minimum wage, it's not a living wage, as you have said, and we need to be looking at how can we support our president in increasing it. I mean, the State of the Union address last night touched on so many things that you and I both care about, the minimum wage, paid sick leave. I certainly appreciate your and your staff's partnership in helping the city implement and educate folks about our paid sick leave ordinance. That's wonderful. The president talked about so many things that, as a nation, now is the time for us to do it. We're starting to recover. And so I'm looking to your leadership as the labor commissioner. What can we do at a statewide level? What should we be doing or thinking about doing on the Portland City Council? You've done so much already in your as labor commissioner, and I hope we can continue our partnership.
Well, we're always pleased to be of service to each of you. And Mayor, thank you very much for having me out, commissioners as well.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. Thanks. Is there anyone else that wants to testify on this report?
We have one person, Charles Johnson.
Come on up, Charles. Good morning.
Good morning, commissioners. Again, for the record, Charles Johnson, and we seem to be trending on a high note. I know you have a 2 o'clock agenda also. I hope that you will consider asking Commissioner Vakin to come back up. I'm surprised that the turnout here is so small, and I think it's maybe symptomatic of one problem we have with labor and workforce development in Oregon. We have not talked about the actual employment rate, the number of people who are not seeking work or not working. And I encourage you to actually right now ask, even though this is primarily focused on minimum wage, I think some people in our community are skeptical that community politicians, pardon the phrase, find statistics that look good for them. And there are, of course, people always in our community for the who, no matter how good the statistics look, things aren't good. So if Mr. Vecchian is willing and you can form the question, I think we should talk about how many people are not engaged with the workforce and are struggling because they have no employment. And I'm sure that we'll engage constructively to improve that over the next year. Thank you.
Thank you. Good point.
Okay. Here I move to accept the report.
Is there a second? Then a roll call on that, please.
Fritz. Thank you, Commissioner Vakin, for your leadership on this and so many other things. Aye.
Fish.
Yeah, and those other things, just so we're clear, include helping us enforce our earned sick leave, being a fantastic partner on fair housing and enforcement of our fair housing laws, providing resources to our small businesses on a range of regulatory matters, and then being a champion for these connections between employment opportunities and the workforce. And I hope we can do this annually because I think this is an important conversation. Aye.
Novick?
I think it would be great to do this annually. Thank you, Commissioner Avakian, for your energetic enforcement of the Oregon's minimum wage law and many other worker protections. Thanks to the voters of Oregon for approving one of the nation's highest minimum wages, and which is an indexing to inflation, which is a wonderful thing. And thank you to the many minimum wage workers in Oregon doing tough jobs every day. And I.
Hales.
Well, thank you again, Commissioner Vakian, for being here. And the invitation is hereby officially and by consensus extended to make this an annual event. So I hope you can come again next year and update us on this really important piece of public policy. You know, in my new job, I've now had a year's experience of being mayor, and part of what goes with that is you end up being the point person for economic development. I mentioned earlier, I've already been in one of those kinds of meetings today. I spend more and more time with employers and prospective employers here in Portland, and they have many concerns. Workforce is, of course, one of them, and a high-level concern. Quality of life, schools, and subjects that don't come up in those discussions are the cost of wages. That's not an issue. And sick leave. Those are assumed to be public benefits that are reasonable for a responsible employer. So it's just interesting, the anecdotal report from the front. They care about our workforce. They care about our quality of life. They care about our infrastructure. They care about our public services. They care about community life and the arts and a lot of other things. But what's not stopping us is paying people a reasonable amount, providing them with sick leave and other planks in the floor of a reasonable quality of life for our workforce. So I do appreciate this important piece of public policy. Commissioner Novick, especially appreciate your piece of that history and look forward to more cooperation with your office. Thank you so much. Aye. Thank you.